Welcome to the Invest with Clarity podcast, where you will learn how success in investing, as in life, is the result of absolute clarity. Mark Pearson of Nepsis in Minneapolis, Minnesota, shares his passion for portfolio management and commitment to transparency and communication to allow investors to fully understand what they own and why, bringing them to clarity in their investments. And now, here are your co-hosts, Matt Halloran and Mark Pearson.
Hello and welcome to another Invest with Clarity podcast with Mark Pearson. Today, we're going to do almost like a greatest hits, but an expansion on the greatest hits. You know, when you buy one of those really great albums and they, you know, they have like the liner notes and maybe a couple of other takes of the songs that you love so much. Well, we're going to do that again, because before we talked about the four keys to successful investing. But what we're going to do this time is we're going to break each of those four parts down: philosophy, strategy, flexibility, and transparency. And Mark, I'm just going to turn this right back over to you, my friend.
Appreciate it. Glad to be back with you, Matt. Always good to spend time with you. Yeah, we've been doing these podcasts now for, what do you think, a year and a half? Has it been? Maybe longer? Oh,
no, it's two and a half years.
2 years. Two and a half years?
Yeah.
2.5 years of wonderful bliss and glory doing this podcast with you. Time flies when you're having fun, doesn't it?
I feel that every day, my friend.
So back in the beginning, we talked about what we thought was a critical thing to talk about as we were launching the podcast, and it was on what is referred to as the four keys to successful investing. And of course, if you're new to the podcast, not super familiar with us, you can go to www.investwithclarity.com and find lots more information as it pertains to the four keys. I thought, you know, today it'd be a good time to start with the first one, which is the philosophy. So before I get into this, Matt, I think it's important for people to understand that when it comes to investing, there's a lot of variables that are known and there's a lot of variables that are not known. And because some variables are not known, investing is not about saying, hey, I really like this company, I'm going to invest in this company and expect it to be a great company to invest in. There's lots of great companies whose stocks over long periods of time don't do well. So as we've told our clients and investors for a long time, no one company should really break your long-term performance in your portfolio. Every company is owned in the portfolio for a specific reason, to accomplish an asset allocation strategy, right? And help the investor accomplish their investing goals. And so we came up with the four keys years ago, which are philosophy, strategy, flexibility, and transparency. And we're going to break each one down into four podcasts because there's enough information to talk about as it pertains to each part of this that go into the long-term success that we have seen in our investment process. Now, for full disclosure, Matt, as you know, we can't guarantee future returns. However, these four keys have been paramount, have been foundational to our long-term success. And of course, every foundation has four corners, right?
Well, good ones do. At least four corners, right?
Touche. Touche. So I thought that what I would do here is I would start with philosophy. And what I'm going to do in philosophy is also try to give some examples, right, of how this philosophy has really been important, particularly when you look at over the last 5 years, Matt. As you know, we used to talk a fair amount about people should just buy index funds, right? And they should just invest in quote unquote the stock market and just own 500 companies in the S&P 500, right? I think that makes sense in some situations, especially for people who don't have enough money to do diversification. See, I believe mutual funds really came out a long time ago, right? As a way to easily diversify an investor. For investors who didn't have a lot of money, instead of buying the individual companies, they would buy a mutual fund. Now, you've got the popularity of ETFs, exchange-traded funds. And years ago, you would buy a mutual fund, and then you would own hundreds, if not thousands, of companies in your portfolio. And then the advent of modern portfolio theory came, and we've obviously talked about that in the past and how modern portfolio theory is you want to own, you know, large cap, small cap, mid cap, growth, value, international, real estate, yada, yada, yada. And then you start having all these funds in your portfolio and you own thousands of companies. Well, fundamentally, I don't agree with that. That, of course, as you know, Matt, probably may get people a little upset, and they, some will obviously disagree with Matt in that. But I don't invest in the stock market. It's kind of like when I go to a meat market. Do you buy all the meats at the meat market, Matt?
No, God, no. There are things in there I don't want to eat, dude. That's
right.
Why.
Right? That's right. Yeah. Well, think about that in the portfolio. There's stocks in there you don't want to own. Ever been to a vegetable market?
I have.
Have you bought every vegetable there?
Now, mind you, I do buy a lot of vegetables, but no, there are certain ones I just flat out don't like.
Bingo. You're making my case, and we didn't even preface this whole show today. So I'm super impressed with how great you're doing today.
Well, you know what? I am paid to be agreeable. No, I'm kidding. No, actually, I have a question, though. And yeah. I just want to make sure that, because you're getting to where I'm hoping you're going to get, but I just have to foreshadow this to make sure that I'm on the same page with you here, Mark, is you just said right at the beginning that every stock in your portfolio should have a specific reason for being there. And it's the same Correct. Thing about going shopping, right? Well, if I'm going to buy this and this and this and this, it's because I'm creating this. How Correct. Do you philosophically make those decisions? And what goes into that? Like, why would you own stock A for B? And how do you, one, figure out what A and what B is for outcome-wise? How do you do that better? I don't know if you and I, when we originally did this podcast, we definitely didn't go as deep as we've gone in the for the last year on some right. of these topics. But are right. we going to talk about that today, or is that part of strategy?
Well, you know, I don't even know how to tell you this, but I don't know that you could have done a better job setting me up there. So thank you for
You're
that.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
So there are components of the four keys. So let me begin answering your question like this. The investment philosophy that one uses or that we use, and the investment strategy that we use are what we would refer to as the empirical components of investing. Okay. The flexibility and the transparency are the behavioral aspects of investing. And I believe that you have to have both when it comes to investing. You've got to have your empirical component, your data points, right? And you've got to have a process that understands the behavior of an investor and keeps them aligned in the foundation of the process. We've talked about process before progress. So we're going to start with these four keys really in these upcoming podcasts, tying a lot of what we have discussed in the past together. Because all of the podcasts we do, no matter what the topic is around, it is about either the empirical component or the behavioral component, or in some cases, both, i.e. the four keys to successful investing. So to get deeper and answer your question, first, let me begin with the market, right? Because I asked you, when you go to a meat market, do you buy all the meats, you know, or the vegetable market, do you buy all the vegetables? Of course you don't. You don't buy all the fruits at a fruit market. And if you did, you'd be the first, number one. And number two, if you did, it would be virtually impossible for you to like all those meats, vegetables, or fruits the same. You will prioritize how much you buy of what because of what you like most. I buy more beef than anything else. When it comes to vegetables, I buy more green beans than anything else. When it comes to fruit, right? I buy more grapes or whatever it is my favorite, right? I don't buy everything. Well, that's the way with the stock market should be as well. because the stock market is no different than the meat market, the vegetable market, or the fruit market. It is a market created for buyers and sellers of businesses to come together. When you go to the vegetable market, farmer's market, you know, fruit market, whatever, there's a seller there selling their product to you. Okay. Now, let me go a little bit into a rabbit hole on here and let me even put it to you a little bit deeper. Why do people go to a meat market, vegetable market, or fruit market, Matt? Can you answer that for me?
For selection.
Well, for selection.
And freshness, local. I mean, there's lots of stuff there, right?
So they want the best of the best.
Right. And they also want to be able to talk to the people who generally are the people who created it, right?
Right. So three takeaways. Number one, they want, most importantly, the best of the best, right? They want selection. They want great selection, right? And number three, let's be blunt. You have to eat, right? If you don't eat, you die, right? So you go to the market for those three things. So let's take the stock market. Because it's a market, wouldn't it be fair to say you want the best of the best companies in your portfolio, right? I would think so.
Absolutely.
Okay. When it comes to the freshness, if you will, food gets old after a while. Mm-hmm. If you don't get it when it's fresh, it doesn't taste as good. It's not as good. Mm-hmm. Remember, I said there's some companies out there that are good companies. Grapes are great, but when they get older, they're not that good anymore. And that means that when it comes to a market, you want the best of the best. You want the best of the best now. You want to consume what you can now. You want to invest in what's best now. And lastly, as it pertains to, hey, you've got to invest. I mean, I had a conversation with someone today who has a bunch of money sitting in his bank account and hasn't invested. He says he doesn't trust anything. He doesn't trust the markets. He doesn't trust investing. He's very cautious. He's very protective. He's very safe about his money. I understand that a lot of people are. Here's the problem. What's one of the biggest topics of conversation right now in the financial services world? Care to take a gander?
Yeah, inflation and interest rates.
Inflation and interest rates. What most investors don't realize is that when your money sits in cash, your risk is that you lose buying power. Most investors correlate successful investing to quote unquote making money. If I buy something for a dollar and I sell it for $2, I've made money. But what if inflation's gone up four times that? You haven't made money. You've maybe gained a little bit of buying power, but you still have lost buying power. In other words, investors should be looking at buying power first. When it comes to the investment process, right? You want to be looking at investments that will continue to either maintain or increase your buying power. Therefore, step number one in investment philosophy, Matt, is investors should think like business owners. In other words, they should think about the people who own that market that they go to buy the food at and think of it as a place to go buy great food, in our case, great companies, not the entire market. I did a stress test. You know, we've talked about stress tests before. I did a stress test yesterday for an advisor, 25,000 positions. I think it was something like 7,000 stocks or something like that in the portfolio. I'm sorry, that's not investing. I mean, this is why you're getting kind of this, you know, reduction fees and people going in cookie cutter and saying to themselves, look, I get no value going to an advisor who puts me in 15 ETFs. What value you get? I could go do that on my own and not have it cost me anything, right? So it's important for people to look at investing and look at the stock market as a market and not an investment. The stock market is the greatest tool to bring buyers and sellers of businesses together for people to take advantage of capitalism and growing their assets over time. Now, I often tell people, Matt, you've heard me say this, part of our philosophy is we think volatility is critical to investment success. Critical. Most investors view volatility as negative. And I just wrote our quarterly update piece in at the end of, for this last quarter. And I basically told our clients, look, 2021's been tough. Markets, quote unquote, indexes are up, but it's been tough because there's not been a lot of volatility until, of course, the last couple of weeks, which is, you know, you're now in the last month of the year. So that does us a lot of good, right? Because volatility is what creates the opportunity to buy businesses on sale. I've used this quote multiple times in the past. You know, most investors don't realize they're making money in bear markets. They make the most money in bear markets. Let me say it again. Investors make the most money in bear markets. They just don't realize it at the time. Shelby Davis said that. That's part of our philosophy. We are long-term thinkers. We put in our investment policy statement, if you invest with Nepsis, you should expect your money to be invested for at least 7 years, because you could get in at the top of an economic and market cycle and then see it go down for, you know, ever and ever and ever, right? And unfortunately, quote unquote, short-term thinking, that's bad timing, right? So you have to have a longer term perspective, just like business owners have a long-term perspective when they invest in the businesses that they want to own. I mean, to me, Matt, this is common sense. This is not rocket science. You know, investing is not gambling. Investing is investing over time. And it's time in an investment, not timing an investment. And so we really think that as part of our philosophy, volatility is critical to the process. In fact, dare I say, it's mandatory to the process. Now, to help with that volatility, the third point I want to make about our philosophy is, as we talked about earlier, diversification, not over diversification, like you get with mutual funds and ETFs. Studies have been, and it depends on what study you refer to, studies have shown that a portfolio of anywhere between 20 and 40 companies should be considered an appropriately, quote unquote, diversified portfolio. Once you get above 40, you start getting the law of diminishing returns. You know, if you look at most investors who own lots of mutual funds and ETFs, their largest investment is around 1%, maybe if they're lucky, 2% of their overall portfolio, right? Well, do you realize that in order for that 2% to have an impact on your portfolio, you know, it's got to double in value. So, you know, at the end of the day, the problem is over-diversification creates this mentality that many investors have, which is they have to think like investing, quote unquote, in the stock market. And we don't agree with that. All right, dividends. Dividends are tricky. And the reason why dividends are so difficult, Matt, is you get a dividend, you get cash back sent to you, right, every quarter by the company. And historically, long term, not short term, dividends have had a significant impact in portfolio performance. And some studies show that even up to almost 60% of total portfolio returns come from dividends. And so when you look at the power of dividends, they are extremely important. And so the problem with that, and the reason why I brought up the potential problem with that, is in a rising, you know, we have lived in decades of lower and lower interest rates, right? And now interest rates are starting to move higher. And many believe interest rates are going to continue to move higher and higher over time. And that does present a short-term problem for dividends, because in a rising interest rate environment, right, dividends don't look as appealing. they don't look as, you know, exciting to get a 4% dividend when money market's at 4%, mm-hmm. right? So dividends are important if you are a long, long-term thinker. Do not be short-term about dividends. Do not think about, gee, it's great to get this dividend. It's all part of the overall entire investment strategy that's going on within your portfolio. Does that make sense?
It does.
You're not really asking a lot of questions. You're kind of being a student today.
I'm listening, right? And I think it's important because there are lots of different things and directions that I could go. But I think what's really important is for the listeners to understand that following your train of thought and without interruption will allow people to glean a stronger understanding of your philosophy.
You always have good answers. I love it.
Thanks, dude.
You are wild. You are dialed in. Okay. Well, thank you. So dividends, we think, are a critical piece, not everything, right, of your mm-hmm. portfolio. Think of dividends as the seasoning. It's what brings it all together. All right. You asked about how do you go about making decisions when it comes to investing in your client's portfolio, right? So how do you look at things from a philosophical standpoint? Well, first of all, we look at long-term trends. Because we're long-term investors, because we're long-term thinkers, that would require us to look at long-term trends because we want to invest in things that are long-term in nature, right? So we don't want to be in a situation where we are investing in short-term things. That would seem like not being very prudent to us because we don't care what's going to happen on something short-term. Right. Mm-hmm. So we want to look at the long-term trends before we make a decision. We'll talk about this in strategy, but some of this has to do what's referred to as top-down, bottom-up investing. Okay. Now, you know, only a few more points here. Important ones, may I add, as part of our philosophy. Number one, as you know, and as we have discussed many times before, we are not proponents of benchmarks. We believe that benchmarking is only a function of meeting clients' objectives. It's not a number. It's meeting clients' objectives. And so what we want to do is meet clients' objectives. Benchmarking is nothing more to me as an excuse to justify one's job. Now, people say, well, how do I know how good you're doing versus, quote unquote, versus the market? See, that's the wrong question. Mm-hmm. That's not the kind of question people should be asking. To go deeper into this, what a client really should be talking about is what's referred to as risk-adjusted returns. How much risk are we taking to get the associated returns in the client's portfolio, right? So there are ways to look at that. There are mathematical, you know, computations that you can look at for that. But at the end of the day, the question should be, am I accomplishing my financial goals? That should be the only benchmark. There's always going to be somebody that may potentially make more money than you. Mm-hmm. But how much risk did they take to get it? They probably took more risk in many cases, obviously not in all, but in many cases, that could be the case. So it's really a function of one focusing on their long-term goals and not a number. So we don't believe in benchmarking. There's other reasons, obviously, also. This is, I think, something that's super important. People will ask, why do you not publish returns? Philosophically, Matt, we don't believe in publishing history.
I've heard you say that in the past.
Yes, we are forward thinkers.
And there's a funny clause and a disclosure and disclaimer that you all have to make, which is what? Which is why you probably don't do that, correct?
Yeah. Why focus on historical returns when the disclosure is past performance is not indicative of future performance? So philosophically, publishing returns is publishing history. We're forward thinking. We want to be thinking about the future, not the past. What happened in the past is the past. What's more important to focus on is process. What's more important to focus on is the keys to the philosophy and the strategy, which of course we will cover in the next podcast. Here's my last point on our philosophy, and then we can wrap it up, boss. We subscribe to the Jeremy Siegel thought process. Of course, Jeremy Siegel, Wharton School of Business, great economist, great, wrote the book Stocks for the Long Run. Brilliant guy. Love the guy. He says the longer you own stocks, the less risky they become. In other words, it's time in a company, not timing a company. It is time in a company and allowing volatility to take advantage of buying more of that company on sale. And there you have it, boss.
All That's right, brother.
That's investment philosophy.
All right, so that is part one of the four-part mini-series, Four Keys to Successful Investing. Today, we talked about philosophy. Next, we're going to talk about strategy, then flexibility and transparency. And if you have any questions or want to know more, please go to the investwithclarity.com website. Lots of unbelievably good information there to talk about how you should know what you own and why you own it and what your life can be like if you have clarity surrounding your investments. And finally, if you have not subscribed to the podcast, make sure you click that subscribe now button below. That way, every time Mark comes out with a new show, it'll show up directly on your listening device. So for Mark Pearson, everybody at Nepsis and Invest with Clarity, this is Matt Halloran, and we'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
The content discussed is for informational purposes only. It is not a solicitation or recommendation for any securities that may be mentioned herein. Advisory services offered through Nepsis, Inc., an SEC-registered investment advisor.